Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on July 22nd, 2020. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a look at Vice President Mike Pence's recent visit to Columbia. We hear a new tone from the White House. We find out the latest on the COVID-19 relief bill. I speak with SC Ports Authority CEO and President Jim Newsom about the health of one of the state's biggest economic drivers, and more. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a 1 to 3 minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and tell us about what's going on in your world, and maybe your experiences with COVID-19, if you've been tested, how long you've waited, what your experience was like with COVID-19. We'd love to hear it at 803-563-7169. Currently in South Carolina, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained. This according to the Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. Just imagine if we described a wildfire like that. There have been 1,242 deaths, and currently there are 74,761 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of July 22nd at 3 p.m. Hospitalizations in the state are around 1,522, and infections are at 19.3%. And Axios reports that the number of people infected with COVID-19 in 10 regions analyzed by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention could be 6 to 24 times higher than the reported rates. This according to data released by the agency on Tuesday. Something to think about there. Vice President Mike Pence visited South Carolina on Tuesday and gave his support and that of the administration in backing Governor Henry McMaster's call to reopen schools full-time this fall. Pence said parents should feel safe with sending their children back to schools despite increasing infection, case, and death rates in the state. His remarks came following a roundtable discussion with Governor McMaster and other state leaders and federal leaders about school reopening.
But with rising cases here in the state, the president wanted me to be here today with a very simple message for the people of South Carolina. And that is, we are with you. And we're going to work closely with your governor and with all your state health officials to make sure that the people of this state have the testing, the personal protective equipment, and the therapeutics and the supplies to meet this moment. We're focused on saving lives, protecting our most vulnerable, but as we discussed today, we're also focused on reopening America. Opening up America again and opening up America's schools. And Governor, I want to commend you for your steady efforts to put people of South Carolina back to work. I'm informed that more than 105,000 South Carolinians have joined or rejoined the workforce in the month of June, and your unemployment rate in this state has dropped from over 12% to just under 9%. I think the American people and people across this state realize that when it comes to a choice between dealing with the pandemic or opening up America, it's not an either or. We can do both. We all have a role to play. All of us need to do our part to practice personal hygiene, wash our hands, wear a mask wherever state or local authorities determine it's indicated or where their social distancing is not possible.
The visit from Pence, Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos, and other officials came less than a week after McMaster and Republican statehouse leaders urged State Superintendent of Education Molly Spearman to require districts to have the option of in-person instruction 5 days a week when school begins this fall. Despite the five-day-a-week option requirement pushed by Vice President Pence and Governor McMaster, it has received substantial blowback from local education leaders, teacher organizations, parents, and elected officials. Superintendent Spearman, who again is in charge of approving reopening plans, said last week that school leaders, in consultation with public health experts, are best positioned to determine how in-person operations should be carried out to fit the needs of their local communities. Now, many of the state's largest school districts are already planning to be online come the start of the school year, while others are looking at hybrid models. Again, this is something that's left up to the district. And one school district that does intend to have five-day-a-week instruction is Anderson School District 5, and its superintendent Tom Wilson was on hand with McMaster and Pence to tout the plan.
We will open September the 8th. We will give parents a choice of face-to-face or a virtual academy that's being developed where they can. We've been surveying our parents. We believe we'll have about 20% of our parents choose to do that, but it is a choice of the parents. At the semester break in January, they'll have the possibility to come back to face-to-face if they so desire, and hopefully the spread will be somewhat flattened at that point.
We'll have a report on schools and the politics surrounding their reopening decisions in Saturday's pod from Russ McKinney. Now, after that press briefing, Pence headed down to Charleston to headline a fundraiser for State Representative Nancy Mace, who, if you remember, is a Republican nominee challenging incumbent 1st Congressional District Democrat Joe Cunningham. Now, Mace reportedly raised more than $100,000 at the event as she ramps up fundraising for the closely watched race and one in which Cunningham has a massive fundraising lead, which has allowed him already to start saturating the airwaves in the Lowcountry. Cook Political Report has rated the formerly solid Republican district as a Democratic toss-up. And since the vice president was traveling up in Washington, he was not at the president's first coronavirus briefing since April. Among President Trump's remarks was an acknowledgement of a concerning rise in cases in the South, something Pence also noted. Here's what President Donald Trump said about where things stand overall in America right now.
We are in the process of developing a strategy that's going to be very, very powerful. We've developed them as we go along. Some areas of our country are doing very well. Others are doing less well. It will probably, unfortunately, get worse before it gets better. Something I don't like saying about things, but that's the way it is. It's the way, it's what we have. You look over the world, it's all over the world. And it tends to do that. The governors are working very, very hard. And we are supporting them 100%. Everything they need, they get. And we are taking good care. We have tremendous supplies and a great supply chain.
And the president also strongly urged Americans to wear masks, something the CDC started recommending in April.
We're asking everybody that when you are not able to socially distance, wear a mask, get a mask. Whether you like the mask or not, they have an impact, they'll have an effect, and we need everything we can get.
And now for a quick update on what is happening in D.C. with discussions involving Phase 4 COVID-19 relief. Here is a brief clip from the July 21st PBS NewsHour with anchor Judy Woodruff and congressional correspondent Lisa Desjardins about the current state of play on the Hill.
This is the bill that could get the American economy through the next however many months. We don't know how many. First of all, there is agreement. Let's look at a graphic quickly on a few things. One, that there should be another round of small business funds known as PPP. That's the program that has kept so many small businesses going during this part of the pandemic. That looks like it will be renewed. We don't know to what degree. Another round of stimulus checks also. Again, not sure how large those checks should be, and it's possible those stimulus checks may go to fewer Americans. They may be more targeted, but it looks like that is something that most of Congress agrees on. Also, help for schools, Judy. That's a new item that is now entering discussions, and it's creating a great deal of urgency on both sides. As schools are trying to reopen in just a few weeks, Congress is now figuring out how to try and fund schools that want to open and those that want to go only online. It's a very large debate.
So let me ask you now about some of the differences. As you pointed out, the House passed their version of this back at the end of May. What are the main differences between what the House wanted and what the Senate's likely to do?
You know, I have to say, this negotiation is maybe more complicated and has more issues in it than any other I've ever covered. But there are a few that we can point to as sort of top level issues. Let's look at what the priorities are that the two sides disagree on. First, for Democrats, one of their priorities is that expanded unemployment benefit, $600 per week for each person on unemployment above what they would normally get. That, Judy, that benefit runs out July 31st. In just a couple of weeks, Democrats want to extend it through the end of the year for everyone on unemployment. Republicans, their priority, as you heard from Leader McConnell, liability protection for businesses. Now, this gets a little bit complicated, but he essentially wants to make sure that no business can be sued for someone getting the virus or being harmed by the virus who used that business. And that is something they say is critical to them. He says some 3,000 lawsuits have been filed over the pandemic so far. Others say they're not sure if this is the priority that it needs to, that he is saying it should be.
As for where this is going, well, let's just say there's a lot of moving parts and still a lot of division just within the Republican caucus. And speaking of federal money, we have a follow-up to the governor's announcement to devote $32 million in federal CARES Act money through the governor's Emergency Education Relief Fund for a school voucher program. We talked about that on Tuesday. Well, a circuit court judge in Orangeburg County on Wednesday signed a temporary restraining order to prevent the state from distributing any safe access to flexible education grants. Dr. Thomasina Adams sued the governor and the Palmetto Promise Institute, claiming the plan violates the portion of the state constitution banning the state from funding private or religious education. We're going to find out more on this as we follow it through the court system. Since we have such a big business section in this episode, we're merging it with our health section as we get a checkup on the state's biggest indicators of economic health, our ports. In Charleston, which connect to inland ports to the west in Greer and northwest in Dillon. Now, they were set to have a record year, but then COVID-19 changed that, forcing volumes down 3% for the fiscal year ending June 30th. I spoke with Ports Authority President and CEO Jim Newsom via Zencastr about how the year played out, COVID-19's impact, and some bright spots on the horizon.
The first 7 months of your fiscal year, Jim, were pretty strong. And then COVID-19 hit and volumes for the year out of Charleston were down about 3% overall. Kind of just walk me through what was driving that early, it seemed like record-setting growth, and then how things wrapped up at the end of June.
Well, as you said, Gavin, we were hitting on all cylinders. We were about 25,000 containers ahead of plan. I think a lot of our business development initiatives had really were coming to fruition. And then, of course, right after Chinese New Year, China shut down. And, you know, China's the biggest single exporter to the United States. And then when they got back working, the Western economy shut down. So we went from a situation of being 25,000 containers ahead of plan to being about 65,000 containers behind plan as we ended the year in June. So, you know, there's not much we could do about it. We had about 60 blank sailings, which means shipping lines controlled their capacity because there wasn't any demand. So, you know, I think that we were fortunate that it wasn't worse, really, if you think about it, if you compare yourself to an airline or another business that's been impacted by the pandemic. And I think the good news was that we were never really impacted in terms of the quality of our operations, the hours of operations. Our maritime community was smart, so they stayed in the game, and we really never missed a day or an hour of work over the pandemic.
And Jim, what was driving that initial growth, you know, looking back in those early times? So what were the big drivers for you guys? You know, who was doing the biggest business out of the port? What was driving that initial strong year?
Well, you know, we've always been strong in advanced manufacturing. That's the strength of the state. Companies like BMW, as an example, had really developed a semi-knockdown, completely knockdown export container program. So that was certainly growing. We also were starting to gain some traction in the retail distribution business. We had an e-commerce transload account at the Wando transload facility. So that was growing, and then some of our resin projects were growing. So we were benefiting from the fruits of our labor and trying to develop business. But that changed pretty quickly, you know, sort of unforeseeable, I would say.
And so when we look at COVID-19, you know, how do you weigh, you know, from March until the end of the fiscal year, you know, did things turn out better or worse, or were they, you know, surprisingly just steady? How did you navigate the past few months in terms of this COVID-19 world that we're in?
Well, I mean, we're used to sort of managing consistent growth, so it was a bit of a new world for us. Didn't really impact. I mean, I think as you will realize from covering us, I mean, the port is a long-term infrastructure business. So we build 50-year infrastructure, so. You know, we've always believed the pandemic would be relatively short term, so it never changed our capital planning or anything. We were on track to deliver the Leatherman terminal. That's still on track. We're on track with our harbor deepening. So none of that really changed. We tried our best to forecast what the impacts would be. I mean, we knew the blank sailings meant our volume would be down about potentially 10%. And then we saw less cargo on the ships that actually performed. And so we really spent a lot of time doing a budget for fiscal 2021, which starts in July. And I think our conclusion was that our volume would be down 8% year over year in 21 versus 20. And I think that 2022, we're looking for the volume to snap back to where we were in 2020, hopefully slightly above. We still think the Southeast ports are going to outperform the market because of, you know, the twin impacts of population growth and manufacturing growth. But I think, you know, we need a vaccine. I think we're not going to get back to normal business in this country until we have a vaccine and we can resume sort of normal life. And I think the other impact is that we source a lot of cargo from Europe, being an automotive port, and we ship a lot to Europe, probably disproportionately a European port. And Europe is really down volume-wise. I mean, what we notice right now is the Europe volumes have been rather severely hit. So,
So those are some of the headwinds I was going to ask you about. So you're looking at European volumes. You're looking still at things shifting, obviously, in China with supply chains both there and here. Tell me about these factors, and then obviously the trade war, how that maybe has or hasn't been an issue with all this other stuff going on too.
So, I mean, there's a lot of questions there. I think China, number one, is really sort of almost back at full manufacturing. I mean, they really clamped down on the virus early. They confined it to Wuhan. So if you look at the numbers, their volume has sort of snapped back. Europe, on the other hand, has not really snapped back. I mean, they're, as the developed economies there, they're really dealing with things similarly to what we're dealing with. What's also interesting is that although you talked about the trade war, but I think about 75%, if I'm right, about what's being imported to the United States today from China is actually paying some form of tariff today. So the trade war has not had a significant impact on China volumes that we can see at this point. And I mean, obviously remains to be seen if there's sort of increasing rhetoric about that now, but it's impossible to replace China as a supply chain partner. I mean, the scale and scope of the manufacturing that moved to China over, 20 and 30 years is hard to duplicate. People talk like it's easy to move a supply chain overnight from China to another country, but that's overly simplistic, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there has been a lot of onshoring talk for sure. But again, that takes a lot of time to do and a lot of time to find out.
So there's two topics there. One is onshoring. One is diversifying sourcing to different countries. I think there will be some diversification of sourcing to other countries, but again, those other countries don't have nearly the scale. I think onshoring is a much different topic. I mean, if you look at a lot of what's manufactured in China for U.S. consumption, it's relatively low value. It's relatively labor intensive. I just don't see that work coming back to the United States. I mean, prior to the pandemic, we wouldn't have had the workforce for it. It remains to be seen if we do in the future, but I don't see that coming back. I don't think the price points that would be created from higher labor costs would be appealing to U.S. consumers.
Yeah, a lot of valid points there. And then, Jim, when you're looking at the future, you guys are talking about your budget, your forecasting, what the next year is going to look like. What indicators are you looking at domestically in terms of, manufacturing in the state and in the region? Tell me a little bit about what you guys look for when you come up with this forecast for the next year.
Well, I think we, normally we build a forecast based on an assumption about, economic growth based, relative to the earlier year. And what's happened in our business is what we call the trade growth multiplier of GDP has sort of gotten down to 1-to-1, meaning that if the GDP grows at 3%, trade should grow at 3%. So when our volume declined in 2020, we had to rebase the starting point for growth. So you really kind of start over and you say, okay, we're going to grow out of this at an anticipated growth rate. And then we add into that the various projects that we've been working on that we think are going to come to fruition in that time. We have, as an example, two more major resin transload facilities that are coming online in October. So they independently each have about 20,000 containers of volume potential. So we sort of add back the new business that we know is going to happen in the next year. And that's how we develop a forecast. And some of it is quite honestly guesswork. I mean, we don't know, is it a V-shaped recovery? Is it a U-shaped recovery? Is it a W-shaped recovery? Is it any of those? So we actually this year used Dr. Von Nessen of the University of South Carolina, who's a research economist, and he'd done a lot of our economic impact studies that you've seen before. And we had to help us validate our forecast, really, because, I mean, our forecast is critical. We're a $2.4 billion balance sheet business, so we need to get our volume forecast right. So I think we've come up with as good a forecast as we can. And I think the major assumption in that is that we would get through this pandemic, potentially have a vaccine early next year, and get back to some semblance of normalcy, you know, at that point. If that doesn't happen, then I think we have to relook at things. I think the other thing is that we decided that we would redo our forecast every quarter now, as opposed to annually. We used to do an annual forecast and kind of let it ride throughout the year, but we're going to do a budget adjustment every quarter now, based on the latest information that we have for our board.
Yeah, just two quick things before we go out. You had a big announcement. You're talking about, you know, your resin, that resin factory, I guess, that distribution point right
resin
there.
Resin packaging, yes.
You have that obviously coming online this year, but over the next year, 14 months, you guys are going to have that Walmart direct import distribution center. You announced that this week. How does that fit into the port's vision? And, you know, what does that signal to South Carolinians about the health of the port, the health of our economy, and maybe potentially other companies looking to do something similar?
Well, it's a great signal for the port. I think if you looked at our growth from 2009 to 2019, it was largely based on the growth of advanced manufacturing, you know, investment like BMW has done. But I think we realized 3 or 4 years ago that that would not continue forever. I don't think anybody would suggest to you that BMW is going to double their footprint in Greer. I wish they would. We also realized that consumption and retail is the major part of the U.S. economy. So we had to get into the retail business. And I think there's really no better way to do that than to have a significant distribution center from Walmart. So we're very grateful for their confidence in South Carolina. I think it's a great thing for the ports, great thing for the Lowcountry, and great thing for the state, because Walmart really sets the standard in terms of supply chain innovation and performance. And if you have Walmart in your camp, I think other retailers look at that and say, you know what, they've seen something good there, so maybe we should have a look as well.
So that's just going to be, you know, things will be coming right out the ship and heading right to Dorchester County.
Yeah, the groundbreaking is in March of 2021, and the facility should be open in April of 2022. What will happen is imported containers will come off the ship in Charleston. They'll go to Ridgeville, and then they will be sorted and put into domestic trailers and go into their regional distribution center network, either for bricks and mortar stores or for e-commerce. They have a very sophisticated network, fashion distribution, general merchandise, e-commerce merchandise. I mean, just very complex, very advanced, and this distribution center will fit right in the middle of that. So it will increase our volume by about 5% autonomously, you know, after about 3 years when it opens. So it's exciting development for the port, and we're really grateful for their confidence. We had great support from Dorchester County. I couldn't say enough positive about the work that they did to help us deliver this project.
Thanks, Jim, for making time. And before we wrapped up, he told me that next March, the first phase of the Hugh K. Leatherman Terminal, the country's first new container terminal in more than a decade, is set to come online, adding 700,000 containers worth of capacity and a dedicated port access road that will connect the new terminal to I-26. And the Charleston Harbor Deepening Project will also be completed by the end of 2021, which will allow for bigger ships to call on the port any time of day, regardless of the tides. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. What has your experience with COVID-19 looked like? How long did it take you to get test results back if you got tested? And what did you do during that time? We want to know. Tell us at 803-563-7169 and leave us a name with your name, where you're calling from, and a little bit about your experience. 1 to 3 minutes, guys, because it cuts off at 3 minutes. Again, 803-563-7169. We'd love to hear from you. That being said, AT, do we have any new messages?
We do. We have a call here from Ben in the upstate in Greenville. So let's roll the tape.
Roll the tape.
Hello, this is Ben Davis from Greenville, South Carolina. And last night we were supposed to get together with some folks from our Sunday school at our church for a bonfire. But we ended up canceling it due to the heat. We thought this would be a great fellowship for this COVID experience to be outside and we'd be able to social distance and all of that. But, you know, the heat wave came through, disrupted that. And this comes really as a series of challenges for us to get together as a Sunday school. The first fellowship that we tried to pull together this year was the Sunday before McMaster's shut down the schools. And so we had organized it. Everybody had signed up for food. And just in the days running up to it, that there were a few people with the sniffles and, you know, we didn't know what was going on. So we decided to err on the side of caution and we canceled the Sunday school fellowship. And, you know, it's been something that we feel like has always been the right choice, the wise choice. But it's certainly been disappointing, missing out on the fellowship. So, I'm here at home today, working on in the yard as I have been most Saturdays, during this COVID, experience and, listening to SC Lee, catching up on, the week's episodes, while I do my yard work. Thank you guys. I appreciate, the reporting you're doing. The digest of local news is really helpful. Thank you.
Well, Ben, thanks for calling and giving us a glimpse of just how difficult it is for something like Sunday School Fellowship has been. I mean, that's just another example of how everything is affected by this. And, you know, hopefully we'll get some cooler temperatures so you can have a bonfire because, yeah, you don't want any more heat on top of already hot temperatures out there. Yee-wee.
We're always here to be fellowship for you. That's why we wind down here, though. So
yes.
We may not be with you in person, but, hey, we're with you in spirit.
And to his point about, you know, the heat, that's why I'm doing morning walks. I'm back on my morning walks, sort of, because you can't do it. The afternoon is just, it's absolute torture. I mean, we do it when we golf because we're out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what I save that for. I'll do that when I'm golfing, but not just walking on pavement. And I'm trying to get back in my routine of walking. I was doing so well there in the middle of all this. And then
July started. On my house the other day.
I walked past your home this morning, just checking in, knock, knock. I just do my rounds. Like this month, you know, I feel like the beginning, you know, July 4th, my birthday, I've been traveling so much. I've just been out of my routine. Probably drinking a little bit more than usual, probably eating a little bit more than usual. So trying to get back to drinking just on the weekends. We'll see about golf. Trying to get back to my chicken, egg, spinach, veggies, yogurt
Gavin
diet.
Gavin feed. What is it, a horse bag? That's how you eat it?
It's just my feed bag. I just mash it all in there, you know?
Works.
But yeah, so I'm just trying to, you know, I actually bought some, I bought some LaCroix the other day at Costco. So that's my new
LaCroix
fix. Instead of drinking during the week, I'm just going to pop a LaCroix. So
LaCroix is gross.
I don't need... Well, it's just flavored seltzer water, AT. It's not disgusting.
It's bad.
Now you're just trying to get people to call us.
The best tweet I saw about LaCroix was they said, it's like you drank plain soda water and someone yelled the name of a fruit in another room.
Yeah, I can do that.
And I was like, yeah, that's right. It's bad.
I just needed something. And it's good for mixing with Campari. You know, when I get my Campari. I got some other things to talk about, too. I finished The Shining.
That's great.
Great book. Now I'm reading this book called The Tomb of the Unknown Racist by Blanche McCrary Boyd. It's on my Kindle. Thank you, Richland County Library. I pay your salaries and your books with my taxes. I see that on my tax bill. So I say, I'm going to check out books. And I do because I have a Kindle. And anyone can. It's great. Great selection of books. They got great recommendations. The website is, I mean, there's just so much on that website too, especially during these, you know, times where we're trying to look for some better understanding about social justice, racial injustice. They have a lot of great recommendations out there. And this one, something.
Are you sponsored by them?
No, I just my tax dollars are. I sponsor them.
Is there a decal on your car now?
I don't think they do. It's just a great resource. Like, they really put their back into it. So I'm cool with giving them my tax money because they show up. So it's good. But it's a novel. Again, Tomb of the Unknown Racist. I'm reading it. I'm zooming through it because unlike Stephen King books, this is a breeze. You know, it's not like
she flies.
A tome. Yeah. What's going on with you?
It's not a tome.
Do you have something to tell us, AT, when it comes to transportation?
Yeah. So... if anyone has ever seen me driving around, if you know me, I've always driven a Mini. I'm 6'3" and I drive a Mini. But
how do I say this?
my southern metamorphosis is nearly continues. Complete, and I bought a used pickup truck.
Not any
it's
used
not a big
pickup.
One. Not I'm any not, used I'm pickup not truck. Overcompensating for anything. You know, it's a small 2002 Tacoma. So. It's cherry engine red, fire yeah. engine, cherry.
Now you can put your Yeti in the back of it, right? Because you have a
yeah,
Yeti,
my
too.
Yeah, my Yeti cooler, Bo. Hell yeah, Bo. So, yeah, just living that salt life.
Straight up metamorphosis is happening here.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I was talking to the dealer. I was saying, when I go home up
You're
north.
You're talking to your dealer? Oh, no, the car. Okay, continue.
Yeah, I got a guy. I got a car guy, okay? He gets the best prices.
My broker.
Yeah. If you buy in bulk, it's cheaper. But I was saying to him, he's like, you don't sound like you're from around here. Yes. And I was like, no, but when I go home, I'm too southern. And when I'm down here, I'm too northern. So I'm trying to acclimate myself and befriend the natives, you know? Mm-hmm. So
that's funny. People haven't said that to me recently, but I think that's because I live in Colombia versus when I was living in Florence. I got that a lot more, but we have adapted.
I make boiled simulated. Peanuts and drive a pickup truck now.
Oh, Jesus. I hear it's already started.
It's awful. I like it, though. I like the truck. It's nicer being high. One thing, being a tall man in a Mini, you can't see the streetlights. You can't mm-hmm. see the light change. I have to, like, duck down, and now I don't have to do that. Now, problem yeah. solved. Got a new truck.
Yeah, that's
and
like
I'm
going to
sell
was...
the Mini, so mm-hmm. for any inquiries on a 2013 Mini four-door, hey, holler at you, or if you want to send me some truck nuts or Salt Life stickers.
1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia.
Care of South Carolina Lead.
Yeah, and just before we head out, I want to say that heads up, my twin brother is visiting this weekend, so he may be on Saturday's wind down, so definitely stay tuned for that. Mark your calendars. And just some quick frequently asked questions. Yes, we're fraternal. Yes, we were born on the same day. That has been asked from people before. And what? Only one person has ever suggested that we're twins without being prompted. So it was very random one time it happened in public. They're like, are you twins? We're like,
you
what?
Look alike. You do look
yeah,
alike.
Yeah, but you would say brothers. You wouldn't say twins.
Yeah, I agree. You look like brothers, not twins.
And I was bigger than him, so he came out first. But now he's a good bit bigger than me. I took up a lot of space. Still do.
I got to spread out. I got to spread my wings and fly. Yeah.
But thanks again for listening to the pod, y'all. Show us your appreciation by leaving us a review on iTunes or a voicemail at 803-563-7169. And stay up to date with the latest on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. Also, don't forget to support your local newspapers. They are out there hustling as well. Also, consider becoming an ETV member. Membership starts at just $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport and all the great programming your donation helps support. So if you're tapped out on Netflix, Hulu, or whatever other streaming service you have, Passport is a great resource. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Oh, I got a shiver.